Welcome to Today on Broadway for Thursday, February 23rd, 2017. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway Stars' this is James Marino.
Thank you. I appreciate that. James, welcome back. I was on my own yesterday because you took a little trip over to the Hudson Theater to see that not Tony-nominated musical revival Sunday in the Park with George.
Yes, I did. And it is as good, if not better, than what everybody is saying.
Yeah, you said that there was so many missed opportunities for awards in that show because it was so great. I know you'll talk about it on Sunday with This Week on Broadway, so I don't need a full review, but just a spectacular production from what you said last night.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the show, in my opinion, is inherently flawed. The second act is kind of, I don't know. It's not as strong as the first act. First act is amazing. And second act in this production is very, very good. Some really tremendous things happening up on that stage. A great, intense group of talent and design and everything. It's just a tremendous shame that they can't figure out a way to, you know, even without Jake, make this go on.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about the potential of this running without Jake Gyllenhaal in the lead.
Well, you know, if they had a handful of Tony Awards, Annaleigh Ashford, mm-hmm. I can't imagine her not winning the Tony Award, even with all these other amazing things happening this season. So, I mean, I forgot the woman's name in Great Comet. What's her name? She's so great.
Danae Benton.
So, I mean, we have a tremendous wealth of amazing performances, and I still think Annaleigh Ashford would have walked away with it. I think that they would have won lighting design. Lighting design was amazing. Anyway, I'll give a review on this Sunday's This Week on Broadway.
Yeah. All right. Very cool. Well, before we get into the news, I want to give a couple shout outs. The great and wonderful Max Moo podcast returned after a small hiatus that they took. They have returned, and on their new episode that came out yesterday, they talked about Beardo, Everybody, The Great American Drama, Blurred Lines, Girl X, and more. I am on record with my sheer and unadulterated love for the Max Moo podcast and all of its rotating menagerie of contributors. They're smart. They're funny. If you're not listening to them and you have any interest in theater in New York outside of Broadway, you're making a mistake. And finally, happy birthday to Rob Johnston. He is a longtime friend of Broadway Radio and a great guy and a diehard fan of Rock of Ages. So I hope he rocks out tonight like, I don't know, I can't think of the name of the guy. Not Nikki Sticks. That's a real person. I hope he bangs his head or something or whatever Rock of Ages fans do. I don't know.
So happy birthday, Rob. And the Max Moo folks, not only do they rotate their critics and hosts that talk about the different shows, but they also rotated locations. That's why they went on hiatus.
Yes.
Lindsay moved.
Yes, that is why.
All right. So let's move forward into da-da-da-da. The Charles Isherwood saga continues.
Yeah, James, these are the days of our Isherwood. Yesterday, two stories were released that shed some light on the firing of New York Times' former number two theater critic. The first is a piece from Vulture by Boris Kachka, and it is a deep dive with some apparently well-placed sources, both on the record and on background. And Kachka tries to piece together what exactly led to Isherwood's firing on February 3rd. While neither the Times nor Isherwood is commenting publicly, Vulture has quotes from many of the people that were on the receiving end of the emails that, according to the Times, got the critic fired, including Scott Rudin, who, per the fact that he's Scott Rudin, doesn't mince any words. James, the piece talks a lot about Isherwood's conflicts with his editor, Scott Heller, and his critical senior, I guess, in the hierarchy over at the Times, Ben Brantley. I couldn't even try to recap all of the issues in the piece because it is a long read. But the thing that caught my eye the most is the assertion on the part of the Times that there was, quote, a crucial triggering incident that led to the unusual step for the Times' powers that be to go through Isherwood's emails. Obviously, they have the right. He was using his NewYorkTimes.com or whatever it is, official email address. They own it. They can go through it. But apparently, there was something that they're not saying what it is that forced them to go through it and find these things that they thought were not appropriate for him to have. Again, neither side is officially speaking as they are currently in arbitration since Isherwood is a member of the News Guild of New York and he is fighting his termination. That's where the Forbes piece comes in. That one by Mark Hirschberg goes through the potential strategies that Isherwood could take to fight his dismissal, anything from a 2012 National Labor Relations Board ruling to Isherwood insisting that since Brantley reviewed 16 of Rudin's 17 Broadway shows, his relationship with the producer does not constitute a conflict of interest. James, I have absolutely no idea how this is going to end, but one thing that I am sure of after reading especially the Vulture piece is that no one from Isherwood to Heller and even Brantley comes out looking very good in any of this. Like, this is just a bad look for everybody involved.
Sure. Nobody likes to see you make the sausage, and this is definitely making of the sausage, but you know what is strikingly absent from this story?
What's that?
That Riedel has not weighed in. And this has been how many weeks?
It's been since February 3rd, so it's been getting close to 3 weeks. And James, I told you about this a day or two before it happened because I'd gotten tipped off that Riedel was going to be writing a story about it. That never happened. The only New York Post story about this came from Page Six, not Riedel. So I don't that seems like an interesting subplot, something going on behind the scenes there. I don't know what it is. Riedel put out a column that I talked about in yesterday's show that was devoid of anything of substance, which is kind of become his MO lately. So I don't know. It is interesting. I assume that whoever writes this will have a very interesting tell-all book at some point in the future.
This is not a story that is ending, so we will keep you up to date as more stuff comes out here. But it's I'd like to see if the New York Times is going to announce a replacement soon, as we are in the thick of the season and they need a second stream critic as soon as possible. And I wonder, will it be an Adam Feldman? Will it be a David Cody? Will it be a Matthew Murray? Will it be, some of the other Jesse Green? Will it be some of the other major folks out there that are the reviewers, the Charles McNulty's, the Elizabeth
Fitzgerald's? Look, I love all those people. If it's going to be anybody from the group that you just mentioned, I hope it's Elizabeth Vincitelli, because as you and I are two straight white dudes, it would be nice if they got someone who doesn't look exactly like us to actually have their voice included in the theatrical discussion in the paper of record. I would be all for them hiring somebody female, a person of color, maybe both, all of the above, whatever. I think it's probably time for the New York Times to venture outside of the old boys club.
That's just crazy talk. No, I'm of course I'm joking there, but the last thing I want to say about this is that they focused on how negative Isherwood was about Brantley in his emails and things like that, and I just want to say, get on the line. There's a long line of people who are negative on Ben Brantley, so. All right.
Yeah, he would not be alone. As they say, don't read the comments.
Yeah. Let's move forward into the show and casting news.
All right. We are jam-packed, so I'm just going to run through some of this stuff quickly, James. If you want to talk about one of the items, let me know. First off, yesterday, Disney Theatrical Productions and Broadway in Chicago announced the full casting for the upcoming North American tour of Disney's Aladdin, which will begin performances at Chicago's Cadillac Palace Theater on Tuesday, April 11th. The previously announced Adam Jacobs will be recreating his Tony-nominated title role on the road, and now we know that he will be joined by Anthony Murphy as Genie, Isabel McCalla as Jasmine, Jonathan Weir as Jafar, Reggie De Leon as Iago, and J.C. Montgomery as the Sultan. We will have the tour's full cast list in the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com if you want to check it out. While we already knew that 7-time Emmy winner Allison Janney, 20 winner John Benjamin Hickey, and Straight Outta Compton and 24 Legacy star Corey Hawkins would be starring in the show, yesterday we learned about additional casting for the upcoming Broadway revival of John Guare's play Six Degrees of Separation. Joining the company will be Tony Carlin, Michael Countryman, Ned Eisenberg, Lisa Emery, Sarah Mezzanote, Colby Menifee, Michael Saberi, and more. We will have the full cast list for that show as well on the website. The show is scheduled to run from April 5th through July 16th at the Barrymore Theater. Yesterday, due to extremely high ticket demand, Second Stage Theater's New York premiere of Pulitzer Prize and Tony Award winner Tracy Letts' play Man from Nebraska, starring Tony winner Reed Birney, has announced a 2-week extension, now playing through March 26th at the Tony Kaiser Theater. Finally, in this section, yesterday, Columbia University and Ambassador Gene Kennedy Smith announced that a 24-decade history of popular music, a radical fairy realness ritual by Taylor Mack and Matt Ray, had won the 2017 Edward M. Kennedy Prize for Drama inspired by American history. Ambassador Smith created the prize to honor the life and legacy of her brother, the late Senator from Massachusetts, Teddy Kennedy. Mack and Ray will receive an award of $100,000. As you will recall, Mack premiered the first of 8 3-hour acts in mid-September of last year at St. Anne's Warehouse in Brooklyn before embarking on the absolutely ridiculous 24-hour marathon performance in October. And speaking of Elizabeth Vincentelli, I remember very distinctly her tweeting from the 24-hour marathon. She was there. If she can, you know, gut through a 24-hour marathon show, she deserves a job at the New York Times. So some good stuff there.
Also, you should, if you are interested in this show and want to know what it's like, Maximu did a great podcast on the 24-hour thing, Decade of History of Popular Music. So check it out at Maximu.com, and they're just awesome. All right. Time Daily Casting News.
Yeah, I wanted to separate this section from the rest of the show and casting news, because it's not often we get Time Daily Casting News, let alone two stories in the same day. First, the Dorset Theater Festival will open its 40th anniversary season with the world premiere of Teresa Rebeck's Downstairs, starring brother and sister acting team of Emmy nominee Tim Daly and Tony and 6-time Emmy winner Tyne Daly, who will be appearing on the stage for the first time together. Downstairs, under the direction of resident director Adrian Campbell Holt, runs for 16 performances between June 22nd and July 8th. Downstairs is a thought-provoking family drama written specifically with Tim and Tyne in mind. The show follows the story of Eileen, Tyne, whose brother Teddy, Tim, has decided to move home and live in her basement. Eileen's husband is less than thrilled about this, and Teddy is more than a little off his game. As the brother and sister struggle to understand their present and their past, questions of betrayal, disappointment, and madness rise and fall. I don't know anyone who likes theater that doesn't love Tyne Daly, and I've been a huge Tim Daly fan since the days of Wings, so I think this is awesome that they're finally doing a show together. And speaking of Tyne, she'll be joining Academy Award nominated TV and film star and literal super genius Robert Forster in the world premiere of the new musical Chasing Memories, a different kind of musical, as part of the Geffen Playhouse's 2017-2018 season. The show, written and directed by Joshua Ravitch, is a bittersweet tale filled with the music of beloved songwriters Alan and Marilyn Bergman. Tyne Daly stars as a woman not quite ready to let go of the life she's loved and the love of her life. Also announced as part of the Geffen season are a funny thing happened on the way to the Gynecological Oncology Unit at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center of New York. This will be the West Coast premiere of Hallie Pfeiffer's play. Also in the season will be the West Coast premiere of Neil LaBute's The Way We Get By, the Los Angeles premiere of Dominique Morceau's Skeleton Crew, and the West Coast premiere of Sarah Jones's Sell By Date.
All right. I saw this story and I have mixed feelings about it. So tell us about the Hamilton merchandise lawsuit settled with Eduham donation.
Okay, so apparently there were some they're called in this lawsuit John Doe defendants, who were selling unauthorized Hamilton merchandise that were capitalizing on the copyrighted and trademarked Hamilton logo. They were selling it online. Hamilton sued not only those defendants, but also a couple companies called Sunfrog and Gear Launch, which were the basically the merchandise hosting sites where these unnamed defendants were selling their properties. Through some negotiations, a settlement was made that basically led to Sunfrog and Gear Launch committing to amping up their work to prevent things like this from happening, and also making a donation to the Hamilton Education Project of the Gilder Lehrman Institute. The reason I really wanted to mention that is because it's a little nice piece of news. We can get back to it, but it also just happened to be announced on the same day as the very first EduHam performance for the Chicago production of Hamilton, where they had about 1,900 Chicago public school students attending a matinee of the musical at Chicago's The Private Bank Theater. So a nice little synergy there. But James, we've often talked about the ticketing market and how Hamilton was trying to go against that and all the things they've done there. This one seems to be a little bit more of an issue for you. Why is that?
Well, I just feel like this is not merchandising of the New York Yankees or something like that. This is really small potatoes, and Hamilton is having $2 and $3 million weeks in New York alone. Do you really need to go after these people? I mean, are they really
making... they are infringing on their intellectual property.
No, absolutely. They are infringing on the intellectual property. Yes, this is true. I don't disagree.
it is interesting. I have no idea how much money they were making, and I don't exactly know if they tried to make something similar to Hamilton or if they were just straight up using the logo. Would that make a difference to you if they were doing something that, you know, kind of tried to skirt around the copyright issues? Would that be different for you than if they just straight up used the official Hamilton logo with Lynn standing on the top of the star? Would that be different for you?
No, if it were a derivative product, I don't think they would have, there would be a lawsuit. I think they actually, cause I think I've seen these things on Facebook and things like that, t-shirts and hats and with the Hamilton logo on it that you can get from Sunfrog, and Sunfrog seems to be some sort of site that does merchandise and you can upload a logo and then sell it through create your own storefront type of thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the company, you know, doesn't really know. It's the equivalent of the old Cafe Press website. I don't know if anybody remembers those. But anyway, my point is that I'm sure that they are not selling, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of materials. You know, you hardly see any Hamilton stuff anywhere. Unless you go to like a Broadway con or something like that. You see things here and there. Anyway, I think we've talked about this way longer than we should have.
All right.
So let's move into next story, which is Paige Price leaves Aspen and Equity for the Philadelphia Theater Company.
Yeah, James, this is apparently an old friend of Broadway Radio, but yesterday Theater Aspen announced that executive artistic director Paige Price has departed the company after 10 years with the organization as she leaves to become the producing artistic director of the Philadelphia Theater Company. In addition, Price has served as the first vice president of Actors Equity Association since October of 2016. She's had a lot of different jobs as an executive with Actors Equity, including as the acting president from 2009 to 2010. I'll let you talk about this since you know Paige a little bit, but the equity president, Kate Schindel, basically just heaped praise on Paige Price, saying in part, Equity can fill the leadership positions that she has held here, but it will be impossible to replace Paige Price. Shona goes on, along with Equity, to wish her the best at the Philadelphia Theater Company. But James, since you've known her for a long time, do you think that this is a very strategic move for potentially bigger and better things for her?
Well, certainly Paige has dedicated a lot of time and energy to Actors Equity over the years and turned around Theater Aspen, and made it an ongoing presence out there, and hopefully will do better and bigger things closer to home, where she makes home in New York with her husband, Nevin Steinberg, who's a sound designer.
And absolutely.
A Tony Award nominated sound designer until they killed the sound category.
Tony, can you hear me?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that hopefully we'll be able to see Paige expanding her role in the Broadway market. And we will see in the next couple of years, if she's able to do the same thing at Philadelphia Theater Company that she did with Theater Aspen. And my best wishes to her for this. This is very exciting.
Yeah, very cool. So you think that she might be looking to turn Philadelphia Theater Company into a place that has out-of-town tryouts for Broadway shows, or it becomes an incubator for new works that eventually have their sights set on New York transfers?
I think that the Philadelphia Theater Company could be a great out-of-town development hub and a great stop before coming into New York, and along the same lines of a paper mill playhouse. All right, why don't you get us out of here?
All right, thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio, and you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt, and subscribe to Something Like It Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. I forgot to mention at the top of the show, you can now find us on TuneIn, which is the app that you can listen to us. If you have an Alexa, you say, "Alexa, play the Broadway Radio podcast," and you can hear us from there. Thanks for spending some of your Thursday with us, and we'll close it out tomorrow and get you into the weekend.